Fun. And what I'm going to talk about, I'm going to talk about kind of the history of soil surveys in the state of Nevada, but I want to do that and wrap it around the context of the history of my family, which I am a fourth generation Nevadan. And so my story starts a little earlier than 1930s that we've been celebrating in this 75th anniversary. So as was very common early on, there's a section of time we have to kind of cover before there was any surveys going on in Nevada. And many of the forts that were put around the West were, in fact, with intent, they were placed to encourage commerce. You'd have livestock and soldiers that needed wool for their clothing and needed commodities. And everywhere you would stick one of these forts is you would get commerce would spring up around it. And this, in fact, was the case with Fort Halleck, Nevada, which is really just on the very northern end of the Ruby Mountains, near the town of Elko, just east of Elko, Nevada. This is a neat old photograph of Fort Halleck itself. And it was established in 1867 to protect the California Immigrant Trail. It's kind of interesting to note, the guys at this fort, they never had any problems with any of the Indians. They were protecting everybody from something that wasn't there. But they were, you know, shipped off. They were involved in the Nez Perce and other battles. So they saw action, just not locally in that area. It did become the headquarters for the Nevada military in 1868. When Fort Churchill was abandoned. So my great-grandfather arrived in the area about when he was about 8 years old, and two of his brothers had been there prior, and they were working some of the ranches and farms in the area that were supplying Fort Halleck. And so young Chauncey, when he was young, came out and joined his brothers and was paid for his effort and for his work in little leppy lambs, and this is where he began to collect some of the livestock that he would later then use to form one of the larger sheep ranching enterprises in the western United States, centered out of Elko, Nevada. And so kind of early on in the Ruby Mountains, this is not all patented land. There was a lot of land that he did acquire, but it wasn't all patented. And so they had essentially the Ruby Mountains in near Elko were the headquarters of Chauncey's ranching enterprise, and it ran from Lamoille Valley to Soldier Creek, which is about one-third of the Ruby Mountains was the ranch. This slide is here to remind me that as far as resource concerns go, too, one of the methodologies that I am aware of, just from tacit family history, is that they would push the sheep up the mountain in the springtime, and that they would burn behind the sheep. And they did this for two reasons. They did this, one, to get rid of some of the woody perennials and bring more herbaceous vegetation in, which was better browse for the sheep. But the other reason that they did it was to prevent any competitors from using the same range. And so this was a common practice. And if you take a look at the fire ecology in the Ruby Mountains, even to this day, there is some serious fire mosaics that are very old in those mountains that go back a long ways, and that this was part of a common practice that was done in those days. So this map is, if you can see Lake Tahoe over on the one side, you get kind of the idea there's California-Nevada boundary, and it kind of where Spruce Mountain is really close to the Utah border. So this map covers just about the width of the Great Basin, the width of the state of Nevada. And what they would do is in the Thanksgiving would be a huge feast, be a big dinner, and the day after Thanksgiving, Chauncey and his shepherds would head south with 12,000 head of sheep. And they would walk the 300 miles down to their southern headquarters on the south end of the Shell Creek Range or near Griswold Well. And there were no sat phones, there were no communication, and these guys would be off and gone, and it was an 8-month trip. And they would work their way north as they would lamb coming back in the spring. So the National Cooperative Soil Survey has been involved with multiple partners since its inception in 1896. The responsibility for coordinating the partners has resided always within the USDA, but it has shifted around a lot. So if you notice the timeline over the side, this covers quite this whole breadth of that. And just simply, I won't speak to this very much anymore, but pretty much it seems as if it has bounced around a little bit, just who was the name under which the Soil Survey Program resided. But within Nevada, it was 1909 when really the first efforts of mapping began, and it began in Churchill County in the area of Fallon. And so this is a letter that was sent from Milton Whitney, who was the very first chief of Soils Division in the United States. And he talked about there being, this is a letter in 1911, and this is after the field work was done. And it is this wonderful advertisement that this work has been done and it's available now to the farmers and ranchers in the Lahontan Valley area. And so we kind of have this beginning of soils and soil mapping in the state of Nevada. This is prior to any real serious irrigation being diverted to the Fallon area. This photograph is from 1910. My grandfather, who was Chauncey's son, would have been about 10 years old now, living up on the ranch. And these guys are sitting here doing some serious haying in Lahontan Valley, about 1910. So early on, it was a pretty serious effort, was to this ambitious effort to irrigate a little bit less than 500,000 acres. And so one of the very first federally funded irrigation projects in the United States was in Nevada, and it was the Newlands Project. And the idea to do this was to go ahead and to put a control structure on the Truckee River at Tahoe and control the flow in the river, and then have a diversion dam, Derby, and you would be taking the Truckee River and the Carson River, and the combined flow of these two river systems then would provide this irrigation to the Newlands area. And 1911, Bureau of Reclamation, this was originally started by USGS, and the water projects that were going on actually spawned the beginning of the Bureau of Reclamation. It was also tied to the beginning of this. And so they ended up in 1911 constructing Lahontan Dam as a reservoir, as a holding for this water. And this has spawned some of the oldest water rights that we have in the state of Nevada. It also is maybe not as as a cheery note, is also the some of the longest standing water litigation in the United States that in some cases continues on to this very day. This is the investigations began in 1902, where USGS was trying to figure out how they could make this all happen. So even though Nevada wasn't given much money out of the pie, it was Francis Newlands that authored and sponsored this bill. And so it's not really a big surprise that one of the very first projects, irrigation projects, went to the state of Nevada, as the author was a congressman from Nevada. So right about this time then, just a little bit different than that, Chauncey no longer ran his sheep operation, and he, in fact, his son Morley became governor of the state of Nevada, and his other son Gordon, my grandfather, took over the sheep business, and so he began to run the sheep. And this is a photograph of the two cabins that Griswold Well, and the old one was built in 1900 by Chauncey, and the second one was built around 1933. We're pretty sure, because that was Gordon that built the second one, and he built it because my mom was born, and Kitty refused, my grandmother refused to like share the cabin with the shepherds with the new baby, you know. So they built the second cabin in 1933. They were running about this time somewhere in the vicinity of about 12,000 head of sheep. And Gordon was also innovative. He was the very first rancher in the state of Nevada. He began to truck the sheep rather than do the 300-mile walk. I don't know what took him so long to figure that out. So Gordon was busy. His brother, who was governor at the time, was also his legal counsel. And Gordon was busy and involved in many, many things. One of the very notable ones that shows up quite a bit is that in 1949, he coordinated the airlift operation for a very severe winter. Most of the livestock, not just in Nevada, but in Montana and Wyoming and Idaho, were isolated, cut off from any feed. And Gordon coordinated this airlift effort, and they went and they actually dropped hay to the sheep. Now, he was good at this, and one of the reasons I think that he ponied up for this particular job was because Kitty would get stuck down a grizzled well in the winter, and he would fly. He was one of the very first pilots in Nevada, and he would fly his plane, and he would drop food supplies and stuff to her in the cabin out in the snow, and she'd have to go out and pick it up and get back. So he kind of like combined the plane and drop off groceries, you know. So he kind of knew how to do this. He was good at that. The second era, from 1938 to 1950, we've heard about Bennett today, I think, quite a little bit in the symposium. This is very appropriate. But one of the comments, and I hate to kind of read from a talk, but I want to read this because I think it's kind of important. He stated that if there were some standardized simple remedy for the ills of the land that could be applied indiscriminately, the job of soil conservation would be comparatively easy. But there is about as much variety in soil, in erosion, and in the performance of water and wind and plants as in the landscape of the country. Wow. That's kind of profound, actually. And that hasn't changed, even to this day. Kind of like the only consistent thing about soils is their inconsistency. So in 1938, many of the conservation districts within the state of Nevada were organized at the request of the local ranchers. This was a pressure that kind of came from the bottom up, a grassroots effort. And so supervisors of the conservation districts really wanted to start getting some physical surveys on the ground. And to their credit, that they understood that this was really, really important and would be applicable to their planning that they needed to do and would be help with production, agriculture, at that time, is to have these physical surveys, and so that effort began. So during this time, the headquarters for the SCS office in Nevada was actually in Berkeley, California, and Stan Cosby was the head of that effort. Ed Nathan, Henry Fox was the state soil scientist of Nevada, and Ed Nathan, who had been working for NRCS, left for World War II. 1948, Lou Langan became a student trainee. 1950, Ed Nathan returns to Nevada as a state soil scientist. And in fact, Ed was the one that hired me. We can talk briefly then about the third era. Basically, this was just really an era of experimentation. Taxonomy was tested in many places in Nevada. Very first Salix Horizon was the land series, Salt Heave. Durapans basically were tested and developed in concept in the state of Nevada. Very important error. As we get into the last error and the fourth error, kind of that I have broken this up to in what we have done, we saw a very rapid acceleration of soil surveys, and this was directly related to funding that was provided from other federal agencies, in this case primarily the Bureau of Land Management. So things ratcheted up pretty fast, and in fact they were utilizing the data that was being produced almost simultaneously with it being completed. And so this was a new take on this. And we really needed to cover a large amount of area. We're talking about millions of acres of ground being covered in survey area projects. And so things shifted a little bit. So there was a flurry of new survey concepts that began to emerge as the complexity of the Great Basin became really kind of apparent and as we observed it. So I've analogized this to kind of, it must have been a very similar situation to this army of biologists that were turned loose in the western United States with C. Hart Merriam when he sent forth his army of biologists and a biogeographical reconnaissance of the western United States, and have been part of the survey of the Great Basin during this time felt a little bit like that. Here we have these army of pedologists, we were out and we were just like mapping like crazy, trying to get all this stuff done. So to meet these objectives and these newly contracted Order 3 soil surveys, this philosophy that soils would vary in association with landscapes, and in fact that these two things were related, was really important. And it was just about simultaneous at this time that Fred Peterson developed his landforms for the Great Basin. And we now had a couple of pieces that were all together. We had the seventh approximation of soil taxonomy in place. We had a good rigid framework on taxonomy. And we had this operational guideline from Fred on the position of the landscape was related to the soil that would form there. And this kind of just really worked out into a good system. So kind of the last thing I guess I would really just say is that it's been an honor to be part of this whole story and this process. Bryant Logan had mentioned in his book Dirt that horizons are these elegant things that make people become soil scientists. And I think there's some truth to that. Once you understand those processes that these horizons form, it certainly becomes a tantalizing piece that we carry with us that others maybe don't share. But to describe a variety of soils and the profiles is a process of developing a vocabulary. And it's not just of taxonomic categories, but it's really of fundamental relationships in nature. And so, you know, this opportunity for us to be able to describe a new body in nature has not only been a scientific privilege in Nevada, but it hasn't been a requirement. So as a simple postscript, I would point out this is Lamoille Canyon, part of the old ranch up in the Rubies. And this is classical alpine glaciation in marble, the metamorphic context that produced the garnets that were misidentified as rubies in the name of the range, is still not mapped in Order 3. These arrangements are being made currently through Jim Hurry and the U.S. Forest Service for this area to be done. But it isn't still done. And unfortunately, because I've, you know, you got to imagine I've been thinking about this a little bit. But unfortunately, I don't think it will be me. I think it will be others that are coming up now that will probably be mapping the rubies. And as a very last little bit of a postscript, Dana Barton is part of a hotshot team, a restoration team, an anthropologist with Park Service. And she is right now in mid-process and restoration of the cabins at Griswold Well. And they have been, with work from my co-author, Greg Seymour, who I very much appreciate, these cabins have been designated as a National Historic Site and are in the process of being restored. So with that, I'd take any, probably don't have time for questions.
Thank you very much.